Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is a Stand Up New York Labs production, providing you podcasts since 2013.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 134. My name's Turner Sparks.
I'm Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. You can find Kaplan at KAP, Cap in America, on Instagram. Cap, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that we're not promoting Twitter anymore.
No,
we're done with Twitter. We're young people.
No one uses Twitter.
Yeah, it's over.
I don't think Trump uses it anymore. I haven't checked, but I assume he's probably on Instagram.
You know you get alerts every time he tweets. Come on, don't hide it.
On the podcast today, we have Daniel Pomerantz. Daniel's an old friend of Kaplan's. I met him at your wedding maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I met him in Israel. I went to Israel with him in college.
Yeah, but we're bearing the lead. The reason why we're having him on, he took Playboy magazine to Israel. And I don't mean he like smuggled in his backpack. I mean, he opened the brand.
He's the Hugh Hefner of Israel.
He's the Hugh.
That's what they know. That's what he's known in those
he's
parts.
He's the Hef.
The Hef.
The Jewish Hef.
Yeah, he's going to come in on a bathrobe in a minute or two. So
we're excited. So I want to find out. I got a ton of business questions.
Oh, yeah.
How do you even do that? How do you market it? There's a million things, but also like, I want to know what the bunnies are like out there.
What the bunnies are like. And yeah, you guys are both international business geniuses. You guys put your brain.
Exactly.
We have a lot of hardware in the room today.
There's a lot of like crossover between ice cream trucks in China and Playboy magazine in Israel. But Kat, before we get to all that, we're going to get to the recording last week. Thank you to everyone who came out to my live album recording. We'll get to that in a minute. But before all that, I got a bone to pick with the New York Times. The failing New York Times.
Exactly.
Kaplan, I'm in a recent New York Times article.
Of course you are.
The
New York Times writes about us constantly to get people to clickbait.
You got to get clicks.
Got to get clicks.
This economy.
Yeah.
I'm in the article. They quote me. They don't use my name.
What do they call you?
They call me MC. Let me tell you the story.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. They have this article about stand-up comedian Bonnie McFarlane. I believe she's Matt. She performs up here a lot, right? At the stand-up New York Comedy Club.
I've never met her personally, but
oh, that's a big no.
Then she's a nobody.
Oh, she's a nobody.
I'm not at the club downstairs. Mostly, I'm up here in the studio.
Well, she's not up here.
She's
anyway.
Not getting laughs loud enough to make him upstairs.
Can't hear him two floors up. Here's the point: the New York Times wrote an article about her. She's been a stand-up for a long time. She's a respected stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
So they decide to follow her around for the night. One of those like the 1,000th article written about like let's just follow around a comedian, see what
36 hours in the life of a New York City comic.
Ooh, what's the inner world like? Ooh, the rough and tumble.
Ooh, they go for a slice of pizza.
Not as easy as you think to be a stand-up. I got a newsflash for you, New York Times. Nobody thinks it's easy to be a stand-up comedian anymore. There's nobody. Everyone's seen Crashing. Everyone's seen Miss Maisel. They've seen her bomb. Everyone thinks they know. This article's done, right?
Right.
But anyway, so they write this article about her 36 hours in the life or whatever. And then on her final show of the night, when they follow her around, it was at New York Comedy Club. She comes to New York Comedy Club. Who's there but Turner Sparks? I'm hosting the show. So she comes up to me and she's like, hey, I'm on next. This is going to be weird, but I have this camera crew with me. These people taking pictures. They want to take pictures of me when I'm on stage. So maybe you can kind of prep the audience. This is going to be unusual. There's going to be this photographer. And these photographers, they always want to make themselves the center of the show.
Goddamn photographers.
That's the wedding.
Most narcissists you've ever met.
The wedding photographers. How many weddings have I been to where you can't even see the, do you take this man, this woman, I do the kiss. You don't see it because the photographer's right in the middle of it. Taking pictures of everybody. So this is the New York Times garbage.
Got a lot of enemies this week.
A lot of enemies.
Photographers and the New York Times.
New York Times photographer. So she's up there in the middle of it. Anyway, the point is, Before she goes on, she comes up to me. She goes, hey, how long do I have till I go up? I'm like, I don't know, 7 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, something like that. I'll come get you, right? So then that's it. I go about my day, you know, innocent enough.
Innocent.
Few weeks later, article comes out. I read through it to find out, ooh, maybe I'm quoted in this thing. Guess what I find out? I am quoted in it. They say, Bonnie McFarlane, last show of the night at the New York Comedy Club, she goes up to the host, the MC for the evening, and says, how long till I go up? And he says, 7 minutes, maybe 10.
Oh, so they accurately quoted you.
They accurately quoted me, but they don't say my name. Where's my ink, New York? Failing New York Times.
But they called you the host or they called you the MC?
They call me the MC for the evening.
That seems like a dig, too.
And they all, no, but here's the one thing I'm okay with. They wrote it just the letters MC.
Oh, like your MC like Sparks?
I'm an
MC.
80s rapper, not E-M-C-E-E, which is the way... This New York Times journalist...
It's really falling apart. They're putting all their energy into Trump, and they just the rest of the paper is just really...
The University of Miami newspaper, college paper I wrote for, is more professional than this. Not only that... My name, if you still look now, if you go back and look at that show from that day...
You could have looked it up really easily.
My name's listed as the host on the website.
Yeah, they could have...
They could have asked me in the moment, oh, what's your name? They could have checked the website. They could have called the club. And they could also figure out that MC is not the letters MC.
They probably don't want to give any more white guys publicity as comics.
Clearly
it's part
not.
Of their article.
Clearly.
So they made a concerted effort to hide your identity. Because people read that. If they read your name, they'd be like, I have to see this comedian.
Of course.
7 to 10 minutes. That's hilarious. This guy's good. So they would have really rushed out to you. It would have defeated the purpose of the article. So they knew what they were doing.
There's
no accidents. We're going to talk about this a little bit with our guests later.
Accident.
New York Times coverage. But
next time I want Breitbart writing that story. They like white guys.
Breitbart's going to do a whole thing, like a week in the life of Turner Sparks.
It'll just be all me.
Yeah, all you. And they won't even, yeah.
Cap, I got a couple things to promote before we get to Lost in America. Right. I'm back on the promotions train.
Bro, you're back, baby.
Well, I'm back.
Everyone missed that train, I tell you. We got a lot of requests for more promotions.
They're like, where are these, why isn't he reading show dates anymore?
Yeah.
June 19th, it's next Wednesday night. This upcoming Wednesday, excuse me, this comes out on Monday. June 19th, I will be at New York Comedy Club, back to my old haunt, my old digs.
Were you emceeing or are you performing?
I'm not emceeing. I'm performing. It's Michael Costa, who's been on the show before from The Daily Show.
Great tennis player.
He's going to be on the show with me, Joe Schaefer, a bunch of people. Steve Lee, this comedian's coming in from Hong Kong. Abby Wishuda, who's done the podcast.
When is the 36 Hours in Life of Joe Schaefer coming?
Never.
What newspaper?
Well, 27 of those hours are him standing on the corner trying to get people to buy green energy, handing out flyers. The rest of them is him selling candy on the subway
for
his basketball team. So anyway, we're going to be at New York Comedy Club, 7 p.m. It's the Kung Fu Comedy Show. We're telling stories internationally from around the world. Right. I got a new story I'm telling, new material. That last hour is done. New material. I got a story about visiting my Ye's dad in China and him trying to get me to learn Suzhou Hua.
All right.
So that'll be exciting.
Sounds like a useful thing to learn.
Come out to that show, everybody. Cap, should we get to Lost in America?
I think we should.
Amazon.
Oh, dog.
Oh, my God.
We got to get Amazon. It's the most important episode. How are we promote Amazon?
Pay for this pod if we're not an Amazon advertisement. You guys, if you want to support the podcast, go to lostinamericapod.com. Click the Amazon advertisement in the upper right-hand corner. It's a thing for some book.
Yeah.
Click that. It'll take you back to Amazon. Do your regular shopping. Whatever you want. A percentage of that comes to us. The last thing we should announce, there are people watching us live right now on See You Live. Hello, Canada. Congratulations, Toronto. This is See You Live is based out of Toronto, Canada.
Look at that. They're our new overlords. They've conquered
overlords.
Our sport, our number one sport, basketball. They are now the champions.
Now they're conquering.
And now they're conquering podcasts.
Our internet.
Our internet.
So they are now.
We work for you now.
Streaming us live every episode.
All over Canada. Is this on big screen? Is this Jurassic Park?
This is Jurassic Park. The millions of people are just standing in the street screaming
is
right
Drake
now.
Drake going nuts in a party somewhere?
Drake has written two songs about us already.
Oh my God, this is a great
thing. If you go to CYA.LIVE, Fridays at 4 p.m., we're doing this live from Stand Up Labs, and you can catch us before. This comes out on Mondays, but you can get it 3 days early.
Yeah, you're going to leg up on the competition.
Go to CYA.LIVE, do that, and then at the end of every episode, we do a wrap-up show just with the people who are watching on See You Live, and they can join in. They can ask us questions. They can be on the screen with us asking us questions. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. We'll see how good our questions are first.
So do that every Friday at 4 p.m., and check our Instagram, check our Twitter, check our Facebook if we're slightly altered. Altering those dates or go to, I mean, those times, but we're always Fridays, right?
Yeah.
That's it. Cap, should we get to Lost in America?
Let's play the music.
Play the music. All right, we're back, Kaplan. I was lost in America last week.
Are you still feeling lost, or you're feeling...
Well, this recording my this album, this first ever album, it's going to be out in the fall. Check it out. Recording the album at the Friars Club. First of all, we sold out both shows.
Yeah, that was amazing, considering a few weeks earlier, it seemed like you were nervous about the sales.
I was very... Off the air, pulled back the curtain. Yeah, yeah. I was telling Kaplan, I was like, I need everybody.
Dude. Yeah, and everybody came.
Everybody came.
The pod army.
And they all brought... Everyone brought friends, so thank you very much. But then the second show, the late show, we sold out that. I think we were like 20 or 30 seats away that morning, Friday morning. And then by Friday night, we sold it out. But I want to go through a couple things. First of all, about 10 minutes before the first show started, the one you came to, we double checked the lighting way off.
What color was it?
It was this giant, it was like white. And you couldn't, it looked like we were ghosts. You couldn't see anything. There was this giant scramble with the people at the Friars Club to go back, go, just double, like reconnect all the lights above the stage in the back of the room. Connect. They had two, first. There was too many. There was like all five on at one time. Finally, they, like really, like at 7:27.
What was the issue? I mean, they don't have comedy there. Normally, they have events. They don't have a light.
No, but they got like a new lighting system in. They had the engineers come bring it in. They were like, "This is the best lighting of all time."
This is. They were all downstairs. I was eating dinner with the family. They were waiting on me. They were giving me such great service. Nobody was properly taking care of the lights. Apparently,
exactly. And it was the greatest lighting of all time once we figured it out. But the problem was no one knew how to run it.
Oh, yeah, you gotta get a light guy.
So that was an issue. Second issue is. The air conditioner, remember the MC goes up. Luke Thayer did a
MC,
great job.
Host. Right?
EMCEE does a great job. Goes up to host the show. Does about 15 minutes of stand up.
He was really good. Really good.
Really good, right?
Really funny.
Does about 15 minutes of stand up. And he's like, all right, here we go, everybody. We're bringing up Turner. It's going to be great. He's prepping you guys. He's doing audience warm up.
Did a great job of explaining to us the stakes.
How to clap. He's teaching everyone how to clap.
I didn't know. I was doing this the whole time. I was missing.
And then Cap was butt slapping.
Yeah.
He didn't know you could hand clap. And then he's like, all right, ready? On the count of three, we're going to bring up Turner. One, two. And on two, it was like when Hulk Hogan, remember when he used to choke people out? And they would do, or he would get choked out.
Yeah.
One arm up, down. Two arms up, down. Two and a half. And then he would go
like
back up.
Flailing back up. And
this is what
I am a real American.
Yeah. Da na 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 na. At two and a half, the sound guy from the back of the room, the guy who's running all the audio, the entire reason why we are there is because the record label sent a sound guy who's recording it and it's going to come out. The sound guy goes, stop. It's like he's busting into a wedding.
Yeah. I have an objection, objection, objection.
Objection.
And the photographer's in the way. No, go.
He's busts in and he goes, stop. The air conditioner's on.
It was pretty loud air conditioner.
Was it?
It was cranking, yeah.
I was outside of the room.
It was coming like from the up top. It was one of those up top high, like boom. Yeah.
Sure.
It was a loud one.
The air conditioner's on. He's like, it's messing up the sound. We need the air conditioner off. And Luke there from the stage, he goes, all right, I think we're going to get the air conditioner off. Should we get the air conditioner off? Asking the people in the back of the room.
I know, yeah, no one knew how.
Some idiot in the front row goes, yeah, I think you should. It's pretty cold. Remember that?
Yes. It was cold.
And Luke goes, I'm not asking you.
It felt like it was a Letterman audience.
You piece of shit. You think this all revolves around you?
Yeah.
Some dummy in the front? This is for the show. This is for the recording. This is for Comedy Dynamics. This is for Get Her Done Records. This is for Turner Sparks. This is for the show.
Yeah. Are we allowed to say the records? No.
Oh, yeah, maybe not. Anyway, whatever. No one's listening to that part. So then it comes up. So then we find out it takes like 7 minutes.
Yeah, Luke had to do a whole new bit he wasn't planning on doing.
The air conditioners
stories
have
about his
to
marriage.
They got
to
wind down.
Yeah.
I got to do a whole bit on air conditioners. Why? Yeah. Everything else in life, you can turn it on and off.
It was,
air conditioner needs 7 minutes to wind down. So Luke is like, all right, I guess I'll just do more jokes.
Yeah, I know. He started telling stories about his
marriage.
Started
telling stories. He did it.
So deep.
It ended up, it was a little off the rails, but he was doing all he could.
He did a great job.
He had planned on finishing.
He was talking slow to like stall.
He was doing slow jokes.
It's like when you're in a movie and like there's like, we need that person to get here.
It was the OJ chase of comedy. It was very slow. Yeah.
So, but it worked. It worked so well because by the end of your set, I didn't want it to end, but I sort of needed the air conditioner to come back on because I was like, we were like trying to sweat out all the juice.
No, exactly.
Because the Friars Club always has the AC on. There's a lot of Jews there. We need AC.
Sure, heavy AC.
So they're not used to turning it off. That's the real
issue. I didn't realize until that night that Jews sweat differently from normal, from other people.
I mean, I will talk to Dan about the Israel. Apparently, they've found a loophole. But the Jewish American DNA, we need.
Oh, it's very different.
We can't have hot weather. We need AC.
You guys aren't military, mandatory military.
So we're just not used to telling jokes in a
They're listening
dry,
to jokes.
Listening to jokes.
That's exactly. So then they turn off the air conditioner. So I do my whole show. First thing I hear to you and Weber is, it's too hot in here. Like it's not.
It was hot, man.
It was hot.
But it was good. It was really good.
Last thing I want to do, and this is for the listeners before we bring in Dan, is we talked about this. I've actually put this on Facebook and people are talking about it, but I want to bring it up on the air. And you can stop me if I have before. Have we read all six of the final options for the title of my album?
We went through a bunch of these.
We went through a couple, right?
Did we narrow it down?
I don't think we narrowed it down yet on the air.
And if not, people don't listen every week.
Well, exactly. You'll get it again. Because I want feedback from, you can hit us on Instagram, Twitter,
Facebook.
Donents@gmail.com. That's the best place to find us.
I'll try to remember to check that email address.
Here are the final options and for the title of my debut stand-up comedy album. One, Back in the USSA.
I like it.
Cap, you like that one, right?
I like that one. I mean, you didn't come from Russia. The downside is you didn't come from Russia. You're coming from China.
Exactly, but it's also communist.
It is communist.
The downside, I think, is that people might find it's political, where I'm not. It's not a political album.
The Beatles song is not really political, though. I feel people think.
And so also, Weber said I can't do that because there's some movie about the Beatles coming out, and no, people are going to confuse the two.
The movie Yesterday, but I don't see how. I think you're piggybacking on it. If that movie's a big hit,
that's a little too in the weeds.
Yeah.
Next up. Little Trouble in Big China.
I like that.
I like it. Did you? So you've now seen the full hour.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, your opinions might be different after you've seen it, right? Little Trouble in Big China. That could relate to getting my, I don't want to spoil it, but the ice cream truck.
But do you go into it that much in that hour? Not really.
A bit.
Yeah.
A bit at the end. Not a ton. The third one is the Very White album.
That's mine.
Yeah. Just based off of me being a very white guy.
Yeah. Another,
you came up with that, right?
Because we have two Beatles references in our final.
It's also a Beatles reference.
The Beatles are the best band. They're the best album names.
The next is Chairman Sparks.
Yeah.
My barber loved that the most. Barber John, shout out in Eldorado Hills, California, because he's an ex-military guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he thought the others were too weak. They made me look weak.
He's like the way Trump respects. Like
he wanted to be strong.
He likes Mal. He was strong.
He wanted to be strong. The next is New Country Who Dis, which is a little bit too, like, it's something that could be dated a couple years from now. No, it's a term that people use, like, new phone, who dis.
Yeah, we're not even going to have
phones anymore in a couple years.
Yeah.
And the people will know what that means. And the final one, let's see. Oh, the final one, and this, I think, is going to trump everything if they'll allow me to do it, and I'm in talks with the club right now. Turner Sparks, Live from the Friars Club.
That's good, too. Always good.
I think that might be the best.
Although, I was just thinking of a bonus one just now.
Let's do it.
Because it came up today.
Yeah.
MC Sparks.
No. MC Sparks.
MC, like MC Hammer style. But
okay, yeah, and I can have a Hammer Pants on.
Hammer Pants, yeah. From MC Photoshop Sparks. Photoshop you in front of them.
And if the whole world's like, I don't get it. You're like, no, there was this New York Times article where they didn't. It's a real deep explanation.
Is the cover of the album going to be like that picture?
There was one I didn't say. Mr. Softy.
Oh, Mr. Softy.
That's the one that everyone seems to like.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Everyone except my barber, because he said it makes me look weak.
Yeah, the barber. Yeah. John just, but he doesn't know what it's. He doesn't know about the ice cream backstory.
I don't think he knows.
Is he thinks it's a sexual thing?
Like, I think he's like, it makes you sound impotent,
Mr. Salt.
Yeah.
It's like some chick.
But it's like layered. If you don't know, that's just funny.
Yeah,
I'm calling myself impotent. If you do know, you're like, oh, then it's Mr. Softy ice cream truck.
Yeah, you're saying it's a clean album, clean comedy. It's soft.
And in any interview you might do, I'm also kind of I'm a butterbean. You know, I don't work out all the time.
Yeah, but you also get to promote the Mr. Softy backstory.
Exactly. If anyone asks why is it called Mr. Softy, well, funny you should ask Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Oh. Come on, get me on. Sorry, I've been so busy, Pod. Then we have the whole story to go into.
Yeah, that's Mr. Softy. So the Very White Album, Mr. Softy.
The Very White Album.
And Chairman Sparks, or I think Live from the Friars Club is also...
Live from the Friars Club is pretty good, and the picture would be the cover. The picture of me on stage at the Friars Club.
Oh, and then my friend Lewis, who was like in the front row, will be on your cover, so I like that.
Oh, really, you're close. Right. Shout out to him for coming out. What's his last name?
Lewis Friedman.
Lewis Friedman. We had all the big wigs
out
there.
He was like, said to me, he's like, do you want to take the seat in the front row? I'm going to get picked on. I'm like, nah, I ain't gonna pick. Not that kind of show.
Yeah, I don't
and
pick
And then
on.
Luke, no, but Luke was picking on.
Oh, Luke picked on. Another shout out, Trip Wetzel came out, who wrote that book about Bud Friedman. It's a pretty legendary book in stand-up comedy about Bud Friedman, who started the improv in New York and Hollywood.
Interesting.
And he wrote the biography. He was written a bunch of books on comedy. So he came out. He had a good time. So should we get... Let's get to Daniel.
Let's get to Daniel.
Daniel Pomerantz.
Bring him
come
in.
On in.
Come on in.
All right. right, we're back. Daniel Pomerantz, welcome to the show, dude.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks cool. for coming.
Your yeah, first, our first ever videoed episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, we invite a guy who wore a blazer, so
I combed my hair and everything today.
Did you know you were going to be on the air and that's why the blazer?
No, I got another thing tonight and it's also on the west side.
Ooh.
So I figured I'd just dress up for that and come here, you know.
Yeah, worked out.
Fantastic. So you started Playboy magazine in Israel.
That's what I did.
Yeah. That is.
Thank Take you. A
standing ovation. Yeah. That's, when did that happen?
It was in 2011. I made Aliyah, immigrated to Israel.
You gotta explain
from America.
Stuff. Like, you gotta dumb it down, the Jew stuff.
Made Aliyah?
Made Aliyah. No, I'm throwing out the words so we can all learn a new word here. Making Aliyah is what you call it when you move to Israel.
Okay.
And I that was in 2011. Then in the middle of 2012, I started the magazine. Before I moved to Israel, I was a lawyer. I was working in New York, then in Chicago. And through the law community, I knew all the lawyers from Playboy because their headquarters were in Chicago.
Okay.
So we met each other, and one day they gave me this big box filled with Playboy editions from all over the world, like Yugoslavia and Russia and all things. The Eastern Bloc ones were the really slutty ones.
Nice. Okay.
There was a Singapore one that had no nudity.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
And no bubblegum?
Yeah. In China and Japan, they had all the products except the magazine. They have the lunch boxes.
I remember. You had it still is a fashion thing. People wear collared shirt, like polo shirts that have a Playboy bunny on them.
Oh,
a lot of Chinese businessmen will wear Playboy belts, Playboy shoes, Playboy.
But they don't have the magazine, or they do have the.
They don't, and I'm not even sure they're aware what it is.
Oh, yeah. Just like a fashion.
It's just a fashion thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
bring it to China.
So they have me over in their office in Chicago at their headquarters to learn about how the whole license arrangement works, and I'm sitting there with them. I know some of the lawyers, but I'm meeting the people on the business side, and you're surrounded by these pictures all over the wall of covers throughout the years. So you're in this business meeting surrounded by naked photos.
It's like we're surrounded by all these records of comedians. Yeah. And you're
kind of like that. But you're trying to make it look like you're not trying to look at the wall.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't because your eyes are darting all over. And a couple of years later when people were in my office, I learned that once you have it there every day, you stop noticing it.
I would imagine.
Right. But everyone who comes in for a meeting feels, you know, like they're trying not to look. So it's really entertaining when you're sitting there.
It's a good icebreaker. Yeah. It's a good also way not to be nervous. Yeah. Picture people naked. You're like, I got.
Yeah, so you look at their eyes darting and you just laugh at them. Yeah. So we put it together. I put together a license. I go to Israel.
So what happened? Yeah. You looked at all those and you realized there was none for Israel?
There was none for Israel. At first, I thought it was a thing. I sort of said half joking, like, why don't you have one in Israel? You got a problem with Israel?
Yeah.
And they said, no, we only launch it if there's a local person there who is interested in it and is going to do it on the ground.
Got it.
And I said, well, I was going to be moving to Israel. Why don't I do it?
So you didn't have a plan for job. You were just going to move to Israel.
I was going
to
move. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, this is
as good an idea as any.
Yeah. Is either this or working at a law firm.
Yeah. To work on a kibbutz. I mean, what are you
working
on
a kibbutz?
Planting and
sounds
stuff.
Sounds way less fun.
Yeah.
And wow. And so you worked it out with these lawyers to take Playboy magazine to Israel.
Yeah.
And when you get there, what's step one?
Step one is you got to build a team, right? And is that the way it was for Mr. Softy too? You got to sit there. You got people.
Yeah.
Right?
You need staff. You need local staff. People who know. Like, you have to start hiring people. But then at some point you also have to build an ice cream truck. And I guess your version of that is a magazine, but then you also have to model. These are all my questions. You have to have models? Are you using foreign journalists?
No, I mean, every step of this is like a whole story.
Okay.
But, you know, we build a team. I wanted a really good editor-in-chief, and I wanted to be a woman because I wanted to make a statement that we're professional, we're doing this in a way that's comfortable for everybody, we're looking out for quality, and I got a great woman. Almost everyone on the team was women, the PR people, the designer, the graphic designer, almost everybody. So we bring her in, we start hiring everyone we need, build an office, we got all the technology we need, and then for a photo shoot, you hire a photographer, a designer, a lighting person, all the things you need on a shoot. And you get a model. And in the beginning, it was a little hard because people in Israel are thinking, oh, my God, it's going to ruin my career. It's this, you know, sort of...
smut.
Yeah, right. What this thing that's not above board.
So they don't have any magazines like that in Israel at the time? Like, there's no Hustler? Well,
there's one magazine that's kind of
Just 18.
Yeah, just barely legal.
Well, there's one that's the equivalent of, sort of Maxim.
Okay.
You know, it's this kind of... It's not full nudity, but in my opinion, it's actually sluttier.
Right.
Because it's not the lifestyle thing where you have the good scotch and the cars and the clothes. It's just, you know, kind of smutty.
Were you guys going full nudity?
We were going full nudity. In the end, what we did, we actually did market surveys.
Or what was the original idea is to go full nudity?
Well, the original idea is to do whatever fits the market. And so we did market surveys. And what we discovered was people want full nudity on top and implied nudity under the waist. But if you do less than that, people are disappointed. If you do more than that, they get a little uncomfortable, just specifically in that market. Every market's different. So we at first it was hard to get models, but once we had an issue and then two and three, the models started realizing that it doesn't hurt your career, it doesn't ruin your life, it actually helps your career, and then we had models coming to us.
Who was your first model?
Our first model was an Israeli, a well-known Israeli actress and model named Natalie Dadon, who had gotten famous from a couple reality shows. She was on the cover, and then inside we had Marine Teremetz, who was another person who had made Aliyah to Israel a bunch of years ago and was a professional dancer. And we had a huge release. We had Associated Press and Reuters and CNN did a live segment on us. It got a lot of buzz.
And what did they take convincing, or were they excited? Did they get it conceptually right away? Is that why they were the first ones?
Maureen did. Natalie took a little bit of talking, but she came around. And that, but that was the first edition. Once, you know, the thing is, everybody has this idea in their head, oh, like, I have no problem with it, but everyone else in Israel is going to freak out.
Okay.
And my mom's going to see it, you know.
Oh.
Right. And, but then once people saw that Israel wasn't freaking out and Israel was okay with it, they started relaxing a little bit and it worked out.
I remember when you put it out, or I remember reading like the articles and seeing the videos.
Saw it?
Oh, yeah. I was following all this. It was fascinating. And a lot of the press, from what I remember, was commenting not on the magazine, but on what they assumed the local population was going to think of the magazine.
Yeah,
that was the most interesting part. Did you find? And from what I remember, it seemed they think that they were not going to accept it in some way or something like that. What did you find? Did people actually didn't care?
No, people didn't care. You know, my pet peeve, maybe it's because I'm a lawyer, is that. It bothers me when people form their worldview around what they assume is going to be the case rather than opening your eyes and seeing what actually is the case. People in Israel, I hardly met anyone in Israel who had a problem with it. I met a lot of people who assumed everyone else would have a problem with it. And that was the challenge with advertisers.
It's like, even what the TV article, I mean, the TV, the coverage was like.
Yeah. But then, well, first of all, we had people from, everyone was concerned about the ultra-Orthodox.
Right.
The ultra-Orthodox were some of our best customers.
Of course they were. Yeah.
They didn't want to buy it in the store because they don't want to be seen, right?
Okay.
And we didn't market it in any stores in Orthodox neighborhoods. We had no advertisements there because we're being respectful. So they all bought subscriptions.
Those are the best customers.
And they'd call us up. They'd be like, listen, I just want to make sure, I'm an Orthodox guy. I live in this neighborhood. Mea Shareem's like super religious.
Oh, Mea Shareem. Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'm in
Mea
Shareem.
That's
hardcore. You and I were there. You remember that?
That's his neighborhood in Jerusalem that's like, yeah, we've been there together. We had pissed thrown at us together.
Yeah, because we had
it thrown at you?
Well, not at us. It was at the women in the group.
We should say that the two of you are old friends.
Yes, yeah, we are old friends. We traveled Israel together.
That's where I met him.
And the women in the group were wearing shorts that went above their knees.
Right.
So, you know.
It's a very religious community that's also, like, not only religious, but it's, like, looks like it's in Poland in, like, the 1800s or something, right? Would you say? Is that still that way?
Except with Mediterranean weather.
Right, Mediterranean weather and cell phones. That's the only technology allowed in is, like, cell phones. But it's everything else is, like, very old. And, yeah, so they get mad when tourists come in general. But then if like
why?
Because they don't want to be treated like
zoo animals.
Like zoo animals.
Yeah.
And then if any women in your group are not dressed like as modestly as humanly possible, their reaction is to throw stuff at you, including like bags of miscellaneous water that I thought might have, in my mind it was pissed. That's how I remembered it. But
and these are Hasidic Jewish people?
Yes.
Throwing things at you?
Yeah, like it's like,
what?
This is before they had Playboy magazine. They're much mellow now. They've chilled out.
You're doing the Lord's
mellowed
work.
Them out. Yes, exactly. That is exactly what I'm doing.
Yes.
So they call the PR office. I'm like, look, my name is Stissel from Mea Shareem.
Stissel. That's one of our listeners, I think.
Shout out to Stissel.
That's a surge from Queens.
Stissel in the house. And he says, I just want to make sure it's going to come, you know, in an opaque envelope because the neighbors and blah, blah, blah. And we actually.
It's like how people order like dick pills.
Our credit card processing had a generic like media company name on it so that it wouldn't show up on your bill as anything.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
In America, do they do that? Or no, it just comes as Playboy.
I think in America, it just comes as Playboy.
Yeah.
But
it's Playboy. Yeah, it's not even, in America, it's considered, you know. Yeah.
It's middle of the road.
But in America, they got rid of nudity. Did they bring it back? In
they did.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive they realized that was the
They got rid of it. They brought it back.
But you would know. Yeah.
Hef, by the way, is a big Israel fan.
Oh.
Was.
Sure.
Did Hef come to check out any of this?
He didn't go to Israel, but I went to him. I brought my entire staff to the Playboy Mansion for training.
Really?
Training. So I'm doing air quotes now, training. It was like journalism fantasy camp. We sat there in the offices before we got to the mansion, and the whole day, hour after hour, top people from the field, photographers come in, give us a talk. The managing editor comes in, give us a talk. Like all, and the, like Jimmy Jelinek is the managing editor at the time, and I was more nervous to meet him than Hef, because he was like a celebrity in my mind.
Yeah.
And then we go to the mansion for lunch.
What's
and,
for lunch?
he's got a private chef.
Yeah, the bunny like, serve it. And like,
they had like menus printed up just for us. Playboy Israel, welcome to the mansion.
That's amazing.
And they had a bunny show us
he
around.
He must have been pretty pumped that his magazine was opening in Israel.
He was pretty excited. He was really, well, he's got this funny way of talking. He's like, well, I'm producing a movie here with Ben Affleck, and I got to run to that. He's like doing 10 things at once.
Sure,
you know, the mind is going like crazy, and he's like 112 years old.
Someone's giving a blowjob while I'm saying all this. he's multitasking.
He was wearing a silk robe.
Was he?
Yeah.
So that's just his, he just
that's
does
just what
that.
He does.
That's what he does. It's his uniform.
Yeah. And after that, you know, he, I said to him, you know, if you can't make it out to Israel, would you make us like a little video introduction?
Sure.
See, he's real into backgammon, which in the Middle East is sheshbash, you know.
Such an old man.
Yeah. So he sits there with all his like designer backgammon boards in front of him.
Amazing.
On his couch in the mansion. And he makes this great video. He's like, well, Playboy Israel, we're really excited for you to be part of the Playboy family. You know?
That's amazing.
That's great. So he gave us a nice introduction. But I was making a point here, and I can't remember what it was.
Oh, let's see. I don't know. There's so many things that are fascinating about this story. We were talking about the first few models you had.
First few models, yeah.
So what was hiring? Were you hiring? How do you find are these photographers, all these kind of people, are they out independent contractors? Are you hiring a staff?
Well, our staff was an editorial team, a graphic designer, a producer, that sort of thing. We had a PR firm on retainer, so it was almost like staff. For photo shoots, we worked as independent contractors because a shoot is one day a month. So you don't need them hanging around all the time. And you hire the photographer, and they like to bring on a set designer and the person who figures out what clothes they should wear. You got hair and makeup, which is for like 2 hours in the morning. And you bring in the models, and it's funny, people would say, did this make you sort of like a vain person? Now you can only go out with women who are whatever. And it actually is the opposite. You realize how theatrical it is, and you sort of become less sensitized to things that are not real.
What's not real?
Well, you know, first of all, you spend 2 hours in hair and makeup in the morning.
I see.
Like, you know how every woman looks amazing on her wedding?
Yes.
Because you have a team of professionals. This, every photo shoot is this.
Yeah.
So you're saying the models are all ugly? No,
I mean, look, they're pretty. They're cute. But
Has Esther Steinberg ever worked for you?
She was in Penthouse.
Yeah. We have a regular on our pod, a comedian in New York City who did Penthouse not too long ago.
But if Playboy Israel would be. Yeah. She's big in Israel, so.
Is she really?
We'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
That would be perfect.
Yeah,
that's better than Penthouse in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Playboy Israel.
I said to my team, you know, it's really important that our first interview, because the Playboy interview is a big deal. You know, they had Jimmy Carter, they had Martin Luther King. I said, we've got to start off strong, and it's got to be a local. We could import and translate any content we wanted.
Yeah.
This was all in Hebrew. You know, it was the first right to left Playboy magazine. You opened it the other
Hebrew
way.
Hebrew goes that way, yeah.
So we said, when we're in the Playboy offices at the annual convention, you know, everyone lays out their magazines.
Convention.
And ours is there, and it's like backwards. So I said, we got to start strong, and we're pushing and pushing, and everyone's afraid on the first issue to be in the magazine. We ended up getting Avi Dichter, who was the former head of the Shin Bet, which was like Israeli FBI.
Wow.
Badass guy.
That's amazing.
And telling stories.
And he's telling stories. He was in this movie called The Gatekeepers, which was it got nominated for an Oscar for best foreign documentary.
So this is a legit guess.
And when you met with, to back a little bit, when you met with like Hef and the actual Interview. Playboy people in America, was there like certain parameters that they're like, you need to follow, like this is how we do it, or you can sort of do your own?
Yeah, I mean, they have parameters, and then within those parameters, you have, it's like any franchise, which, you know,
like when you went over to Jimmy Conway's house in
JFC
in New Jersey.
Did you go to the Jimmy Conway mansion?
I've been to the Jimmy Conway mansion, JFC.
He brought you in and said he served lunch and everything, and then he told you how to do it.
Yeah, there was all these bunnies walking around. He was not too far off, actually. Yeah. He was recently single as a 55, 60-year-old man at that point. So, so it was a franchise model?
It's a franchise model. They give you a lot of flexibility because they realize that content for publication has to meet what the locals want.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they want to fit what, you know, the brand needs. So there's this balance. Within this framework, you can do whatever you want, but you also want to fit the framework.
So what percentage of the articles, the models, was local versus like taken from the main, like the American magazine?
We started out at about 60-40, 60% local, 40% foreign, and the cover model and centerfold was always local. But in any given Playboy, there's usually at least three different photo spreads, and only one of them is a centerfold spread. So we would have one local, and that would be the centerfold spread, and then we'd have two foreign. And the reason you do foreign is because there's no real cost, because you just take it from this, they call it the archive, and it's this library. And now it's on the internet, so it's not a literal library, but every publication in the world uploads their content. So you can take from anyone you want.
Like 1974 Playboy.
Actually, I'll tell you what, there was a 1970-something Playboy, I think it was 78, that was the Women of Israel.
Ooh. Oh.
And so we reprinted a bunch of the photos from that. People went. It's funny because Israelis are thinking, "Oh, this could never be in Israel," but and yet it already was.
Yeah.
Ironically, I think the '70s were a more chill time there.
Yeah,
that's most places actually.
Yeah,
'70s is pretty chill. What was the marketing strategy for this? Was it were you going old school? Like, but if it never had happened there before, like,
yeah.
What was the awareness of Playboy brand to Israelis even before you? Got
very
there?
High awareness. Everybody okay. knows what Playboy is. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the problem.
And they
is
must have been able to get American or. They could get magazines, right? Or they
yeah, I mean, they
before.
Could get foreign editions, yeah. too. Everyone knows what it is. The problem is people come with their assumptions,
yeah.
right? So in some ways, it works against you a little bit. But the idea was to first get a lot of organic media, have a big opening, a big press conference, and we did get a lot of hype from that. And the next is just having magazines on the stands. You know, in a city, you walk past the bodegas, and you see the magazines, you know,
yeah.
on display. So that it's almost like mini billboards.
Right, right.
So that was our strategy.
And this was still 2011, 12 when people yeah, still read magazines.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of going out a little bit, but, you know, there's still a niche market for it. What we found was the problem is that in Israel there's a lot of illegal monopolies, and the government doesn't really enforce it. They got monopolies on food distribution, on natural gas, all sorts of things. So one of the monopolies is on the distribution of magazines and newspapers, and one of the family that owns that monopoly also happens to own the competing publication, which is the one I told you that's like Maxim.
The Maxim magazine. Yeah. So they're owned by someone else, so then they start causing trouble with yeah. the government with
you? They just wouldn't let enough of our magazines get onto the newsstands. And people would call us and they'd complain. They'd say, I'm trying to buy it. It's always sold out. Where can I get it? It's not at my local drugstore.
So they go to the newsstands and say, you can only carry this many Playboys?
They control what's on the shelves. So they would go to the newsstands and just stock the shelves with whatever they want. And I'd go to them. I'd say, you know, I went to a bunch of newsstands today. It's not there. And they're like, well, maybe they didn't want it. I said, well, I talked to the people at the newsstand and they said it just never showed up. So that became an issue for a while. And ultimately, we had to either go against one of Israel's most powerful families or stop the project. And I just didn't have the resources to
sure,
take on that fight.
Sure, fight them. Sounds like what happened to me. But yeah. the powerful family, mine was the government.
The Chinese government's even more powerful probably. Yeah.
Was there any opportunity to work with this family or no? They had no interest.
No, I actually talked to them and they said, and it's actually reasonable when you think about it. I actually now teach a business course at one of Israel's universities called the IDC, and I use this as a case study. And he said to me, why would I ever enter into a partnership with a product that competes with one of my own when I could just have a monopoly for my own product?
That's what the guy said?
Yeah.
And
it's kind of shameless that he just was like, yeah, I've got a monopoly and I'm keeping it, which
right.
is blatantly illegal.
Yeah.
But
whose
you know.
Job is it to enforce this? Who do I got to talk to? Do I got to call Bibi? Who do I got to call?
Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you what. You know, there are all these criminal cases now against Bibi. It's this whole scandal thing. And who knows if any of them will.
Well, clearly, you guys should have been sending him some champagne and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. One of the indictments against Bibi right now names the guy, the head of the family that we were up against.
Oh.
So
wow.
So
if he could go down.
Yeah, well,
Playboy could rise from the ashes.
We'll bring it back.
Maybe the election results would be different if people knew that you're not only voting, Gantz.
You're voting for Playboy.
You're voting for Playboy.
Right. If people only knew.
So was it a thing like you're bringing it back? You're bringing it to Israel as a nostalgic thing or as like a new counterculture thing?
A new counterculture thing, because I realize, you know, you walk in Tel Aviv. Right now it's Gay Pride Week in Tel Aviv.
Shout out.
And NPH is out there, Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
He's in Israel?
He's
got to get him on the pod when he gets back. Gay Pride Parade in Israel is a great topic.
Yeah, he's at the Pride Parade now. He's the international ambassador to the Pride Parade.
Wow.
The MC, the New Times.
On the float sporting a stash.
Nice.
And, you know, the culture in Israel is evolving.
Right.
So I thought, look, it's the perfect time. And from a market point of view, it is. It's not for everybody, but there is a niche for it. And there are people who feel a little rebellious and they want to stick up in a way. But there's also those business systems that you got to compete against, which is a very China kind of phenomenon to deal with.
I feel like here for a couple years, like especially like 2016, 17, when the height of all the Me Too stuff, it wouldn't have been a good time.
Is that over now? Like, you're saying it like...
Well, it's definitely less.
Right, okay.
Right?
Well, less, yeah.
It's
yeah.
not as frantic as it was a year or
right.
two ago.
Bringing back Playboy would be... Or, well, Playboy still exists, but yeah.
Well, my question is, Playboy, I'm sure, during like a year ago, would have been seen as something not... Well, it's hard to figure out what's counterculture.
Well, you used to joke like people read Playboy for the articles, but then I felt like Playboy literally started to pump up the articles in America.
But also the history of Playboy is a giant counterculture thing. Like the Playboy at the mansion in Hefner would have like black comedians perform when no one would allow them to, black musicians. And then it turned into this thing that was like somehow seen as like anti-women or whatever. And so I'm trying to figure out where it lands now in the culture.
Right.
As and even in Israel,
but in a country like Israel, it's just such different parameters because, like, that is an actual country. It's like a religious country, but in theory, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
then it's like secularizing to many people, so it's
well, yeah,
going in the direction.
Israel didn't really have the whole Me Too phenomenon in the way America did.
Yeah,
and it is in Israel. Something like this is a little counterculture because you're kind of saying, "Hey, I'm not going to be sort of modest and religious." Which is not that not all of Israel is that way, but the people who aren't like to stand up and declare it a little bit.
And the Israeli, I mean, I'm picturing the stereotypical Israeli man is pretty aggressive with the women. so they better hope there's no Me Too.
The whole country would go down.
Yeah, it would have been good for me. I was trying to compete with Israeli men was never a good idea.
No, listen, you come to my house, my mother, she make dinner, we do Shabbat.
Yeah, and they have a soldier, for American girls, they have a soldier uniform, like ready at all, like it's impossible competition. Yeah.
You got the
to put on.
Yeah, because they've all been in the army. It's
sure,
not even
it's like Fleet Week, but all the time.
Every single man in the country's been in the army.
Yeah. So in Israel, saying I was in the army, it's like saying I went to high school. Everyone's done it.
Big deal.
Yeah. But then the American,
but the American girls are like,
oh my god, he's like so Israeli. It's like totally amazing. Yeah. And the soldier's like, no, at least then you come to my house, we do naked.
It writes itself.
And my favorite part is...
That's so cute how he says that.
Now that I've been there for a while, I spent a year volunteering in the army, I know from looking at the uniform whether a guy's a combat guy or
like
whether
he's
a kitchen guy.
Yeah.
Sure. And a lot of these guys, they're like, you know, from the kitchen special forces. And they're like, I am Houthi special forces. I protect my country.
Cap, you need to get Teddy Kaplan to go be a kitchen guy.
Yeah, well, you know, this is so funny because when I lived in L.A. after college and I was like, had no direction in anything. And there was Israel, there was like some terrorism stuff going on. Like,
unlike now.
Yeah, unlike now, exactly. I have so much going on now. So I was like looking at like things you can do when you're young and don't have kids and everything. I was like, oh, I could go to Israel and volunteer. And I somehow got on the phone with some guy in L.A. and I exactly like your voice you just did. And I'm like, what can I do in the army? He was like, oh, you know, you can pack soldiers' lunches.
Kev, you wouldn't be able to handle the
and
army.
I was like, so I was like, pack soldiers' lunches? That's like, he goes, you could clean the Uzis and pack their lunches.
Ooh.
And I was like, well, if I clean the Uzis, I'm going to set them off by accident. And I just, the most emasculating thing I could be is like packing lunch. Here you go, soldiers. Here you go. I made a peanut butter and jelly.
Have a great day at school today.
But like, would the girls have known the difference in the uniform?
Nah,
got one?
All you need to do is get yourself on a birthright bus with that uniform, and you just tell them
did they give you a Uzi?
Special lunch forces.
Special lunch force division.
What did you do in the military for
a
year?
Well, I was, you know, I was there after the age where they actually let you conscript. Mm. So
was this after Playboy?
This was after Playboy.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, I was a little, you know, I finished the project. I'm like, well, what do I want to do next? I thought, well, I'm going to take a year, find myself, spend some time on army bases.
This is a great like movie idea. Middle-aged guy.
Starring Pauly Shore.
This is Stripes.
American lawyer.
Yeah, American lawyer on an army base. And so I'm not officially a soldier. I'm officially a civilian. But I'm in uniform. I'm living in barracks. I'm eating lunch in the mess with the soldiers.
And then you're packing lunches?
Well, I wasn't packing lunches, but I did clean, not Uzis, I cleaned M16s.
Okay, yeah.
And occasionally Tavors. And I packed medical supplies. Like when you hear about Israel going off to... to Haiti to set up a field hospital. We packed those hospitals. They all come in these boxes. That was me. Oh. I didn't go there, but I packed them.
Yeah, it's like you went there. You did enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
When they go out for when there's an emergency, you don't have time to get all your supplies, so you pack what's called a kit bag in advance that every soldier has with everything they need. And the kit bag's different depending on your specialty. So we'd pack kit bags and make sure it has the right gas mask or the right bomb detector or all the things that you need in it.
Well, that's
holy cow.
They should have like a little iPhone with some podcasts in case you're stuck somewhere. Listen to Lost in America.
Back to Playboy for a second. Do you think that if this family wouldn't have come in, that it would have been still going today?
I think if this if that system of monopolies wasn't there, I know it would be going because we had enough market studies that we knew how many people wanted to be buying it. And we knew how many complaints were coming in of, you know, where is it in the stores. And in Israel, for whatever reason, people like to go to point of sale. They don't like to do subscription.
Okay.
Except for Shissel and Meisharim.
Yeah. Old Shissel. Except for Shissel and Meisharim.
Old man Shissel.
Yeah.
Shout out.
So I can't get my Playboy in the store. I don't understand it. So we get them to... We totaled up. We had a business model. We knew how many people we should be selling to.
Right.
And from there, you can compare it against your fixed costs and your variable costs, and you make the calculation. And, you know, it was not going to be a $1 billion startup. It wasn't going to be Waze.
Yeah.
But it would have been a very healthy business.
And there's money. Because you started this long after, like, everyone assumed print died. Like, that was, like, 2006.
There's
money. And you think you can make money in print still?
It's a niche. Look, there's still money in AM radio, right?
Yeah.
It's not big, but, you know, it's enough for a certain number of companies to have a niche.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not podcasting big. But, yeah.
You know,
it's like, not camping. It's not See You Live.
We're not going to AM
it's
radio.
It's not Lost in America big.
Not Lost in America. So what about advertisers? They weren't scared to advertise with you?
Some were. We got a number that did advertise, especially luxury products. Like we had a line of luxury watches. We had an importer that Rolex.
It's a gentleman's magazine.
Yeah, that was the idea. We had a number of different liquor companies that would, you know, high-end scotches and things like that. But there were also advertisers we'd sit down with, and they'd say, in all honesty, I think it's great, but I'm going to lose all my customers.
Yeah.
And then we'd sit and we'd say, yeah, listen, all those customers you're thinking of losing, they're calling us and subscribing. You're talking about Shtissel from me.
This is like Howard Stern's old thing. Yeah, remember? Yeah, like all the subscribers were all the advertisers were dropping him. Meanwhile, his like ratings were going up and up and up and up and up and up and up.
This is the Howard Stern of Israel. Right here,
should have just gone straight into his advertising company.
So then what happened when it was over? You just sort of it was no like try to sell it or just
just had to. I mean, you know, you could only sell it if it was had enough of a revenue stream to sell it. I almost sold it. I did almost sell it. There were some interested buyers, but they were shady characters. And I didn't want the brand name associated with them. Yeah. I didn't want my name in the newspaper next to their name.
Oh.
And so...
You didn't want to let Hef down either.
I didn't want to let Hef down.
And would you have needed their approval, Playboy's approval? They'd have to approve who was taking over the
You know, that's an interesting license. Question. I mean, speaking as a recovering lawyer, I found there wasn't a prohibition on me selling the company, the ownership of the company.
Interesting.
But I couldn't transfer the license to a different company. But my own company, but the company itself.
That's a loophole.
You know, yeah, it's an interesting loophole.
That's a good lawyer. I mean, Blue shirt, watch out. We might need a new lawyer on the pod.
But at the same time, if I sell to a shady character, my name's in the newspaper next to his, right? And I'm always going to be connected with this guy.
Speaking of that, extra question. You had all that press. Did you ever get recognized as the Playboy guy?
I did once in a while.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. So you're like... A couple of times people would stop me in the street.
Oh, it was
like,
a guy?
Hey. guys, that was the thing. Guys loved it.
Yeah.
The guys would be like, oh my... Totally nice to meet you, man. That's amazing.
You're the Playboy guy.
Yeah. And
Israeli half.
People would be like, wow, it's so cool. You're like so down to earth. You're so normal. It's amazing. I'm like, you're supposed to be normal.
What do they think you're going to be?
Yeah, that's the thing.
The magazine business.
When you get a little notoriety, it's like just by doing things you're supposed to do anyway.
You get credit just for not being a prick.
You get, you get credit for
that's
not being
That's why I
want to
be
asshole.
Famous.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. If you're in the heyday of print, you would have become a prick.
Yeah,
but, definitely.
You know, this day and age.
And you know, it was nice with respect to, like, women didn't really, like, stop me on the street, but when I was in industry, you know, women would be interested because of their careers and stuff. And see,
right. They'd be like, "Oh, if I sleep with you, do I get in the magazine?" No.
You know, surprisingly,
he's not answering that. That. By the way, that was a hard yes. With that, change the
I mean, that's why.
No, I tell you what. Actually, my job was very much. I mean, I was. It was a business job. I was going over spreadsheets and contracts and things like that.
Lunch pail, bring, pack a lunch.
Hard hat.
Because the photographers unions. And those guys were having all the fun.
Mm. Those photographers.
Yeah.
Sounds like a disaster.
I should have volunteered instead of packing soldiers' lunches, volunteered to work at Playboy.
We should have just gone to work for him.
We should have done that.
I would have moved.
Oh, you should have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the nice thing about it, though, is Israel's kind of a small country. So people in Israel are famous, but they're not real famous. They're like Israel famous, you know? And anyone I wanted to meet, I just pick up the phone and be like, "Hey,
that's awesome.
It's Daniel, Playboy, could we have coffee?"
And they say yes?
Yeah, they say yes. Yeah, but anyone, people in military, politics. But I wanted to. I sat down with the head of the IDF.
Head of Hamas? No.
No. Head of that. You know, I probably could have.
They likes Playboy. You could have used Playboy to make peace. Like, if you start sending Playboy magazines to the you could maybe
to the
the territories and to the different Arab countries. You'd be like, "Oh, these Israeli girls, I'm falling in love with them. We're all similar."
I'm sure. It would have worked.
I'll tell you something. I know you're joking, but our analytics on all of our digital media showed that 15% of our engagement online was from Arab countries.
There you go.
And I don't just mean like the soft ones like Jordan and Egypt. I mean like full on hardcore.
Arabs?
Yeah. The hard Arabs. Like Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Syria. When Syria was still a place.
Oh, wow.
Afghanistan?
Yeah. I don't know the internet.
Well, Afghanistan isn't Arab.
Oh yeah,
I can't remember if we had any from there, but they would leave comments in Arabic, and there were positive ones because unless the one time it got a little negative is there was a war in 2014, and we sent some magazines down to the front. We sent a whole stack there.
Really?
And I said,
for the troops.
Yeah, for the troops.
Nice.
Support our troops.
Support our boys.
And I said, you know, you can have as many as you want. Just do me one thing. Take a few selfies of you reading the magazine. We'll put it up on our digital media, on Facebook, which was still a thing back then. I guess it's not anymore.
Yeah.
And so I put it up, and then we got some comments from our Arabic followers saying some nasty things. But other than that, unless it got political or related to a war, it was just they love the women. They love the culture.
That's awesome.
I don't imagine Playboy was that political. In general.
No, I mean, look, like I said, we had an interview with Avi Dichter, who was a Shin Bet. We had an interview with the head of Israel's nuclear commission.
Ooh.
So we touched on politics.
Did he go into things they don't talk about normally? Because they don't actually admit to having nuclear, right?
Well, they have nuclear energy,
right,
which they admit to.
But I'll talk about that. Yeah.
And they don't have, saying this in air quotes.
It's
they
the
don't
most
have
air quota
any
thing ever, is Israel will not officially say they have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
But they do have a nuclear commission, and they do have a guy who's the head of it.
Yeah, so.
So, and then what are you up to now? You're working in media, right?
I am. Afterwards, I ended up joining an organization called Honest Reporting, which looks out for bias or inaccuracy in the media about Israel, which, believe it or not, happens a little bit. And
Could you help Turner with his problem with the New York Times?
I tell you, New York Times is one of our favorite targets.
You're a lawyer. Let's sue him for not quoting me.
Oh my
me.
God, they're like the bane of my existence.
Oh,
you know,
and me both.
They published this cartoon that was like, you know what I'm talking about?
Super,
with the dog and the thing.
That anti-Semitic.
It was a dog with Bibi's face with a Jewish star hanging around his neck. And a blind Donald Trump being led as if it were a guide dog.
Yes.
And the idea is that Jews control the government.
That was like something out of like World War II Hitler.
Yeah, it was It was written by a Portuguese cartoon artist who has done a lot of anti-Semitic stuff in the past and mimics the Der Stürmer Nazi style of cartoons.
And Turner just wants to hear, did you dox that guy? That's all Turner.
I like doxing. I'm pro doxing.
Doxing. Does that mean like?
I just learned what it means, but it means attacking them and revealing their home address.
Yeah,
other information.
So people can attack them online.
I think it's illegal.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't do that.
No, Dan does it on the up and up. He just tries to educate people.
We're on the up and up.
He's not.
I started in the organization as a content editor, reading the news every day, writing about things like that. And then because they knew that I had the background in law and business and ironically in Playboy, but to them it was business experience. When there was a shakeup at the top levels, they asked me to be the CEO executive director. So that's what I'm doing now. And that's why I'm in New York now is talking at some things and doing some fundraising, that sort of thing.
Got to bring in the Jewish money
for Honest Reporting. So go check out honestreporting.com.
And that they can find you there.
They can
all
find
of
us
our
there.
Really pro-Israel listeners. That means my mom, yep. my uncle, my dad, yep. all you guys. Check it out. Yeah. Yes. I have cousins in Israel.
Cap's mom, go check out honestreporting.com. Yeah. I'm trying to find it on the YouTube. I can't find
it. Yeah, she couldn't find C Alive. I was relating.
Oh, she's just trying
she
right
can't
now.
Get on, she said. She can't even get to work.
Well, that's it, Chan. All right, Dan, thanks for doing the pod, man.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Cap, should we get to the news?
Let's get to the news.
Play the music. We're back. First news story of the week comes to us from the Washington Post.
Look at that. Fancy. I'm sure it's an enemy of Dan's.
Yes. Ooh, la la. Dodgeball in PE class. Dodgeball in PE classes teaches students to dehumanize and harm their peers, and it's a tool of oppression.
Oh, I saw that one.
Isn't that is there saying that's a bad thing or a good thing?
Professor from three Canadian universities said in a presentation this week at the Congress of Humanities and Social Sciences.
Those weak Canadian professors.
In Vancouver, dodgeball is a tool of oppression. Here's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
That's the whole point of dodgeball. Toughen you up. You're in the Israeli military. You don't think
they play dodgeball in Israel, I'm sure.
Canadian kids can't handle dodgeball?
I mean, American kids can't handle it anymore because they don't. Teddy was at a birthday party about 4 months ago.
Yeah.
At a gym kind of place, and I know the person running it. And she told me they play a lot of games. She said she tried to play dodgeball with the kids.
Yeah.
And they did not understand the rules, like, because no one had ever played it before, to such a point where she abandoned it because she was like, we don't have a lot of time.
So they
couldn't get dodgeball right. None of the kids understood it. They've never played it.
You take a ball and you throw it at kids. I imagine they don't play Smear the Queer anymore, probably. As well.
You think?
I don't know that game, actually. We didn't play that.
That's the game where you throw a football in the air. Whoever catches it, everyone just tackles them.
And what is the
and
queer
then when
part?
They get tackled.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What the fuck? I never heard of that.
That's what the game was called.
You just offended me.
And then if you fall down, if you get tackled, then you have to throw it in the air. And then whoever catches it, you just run away from everyone trying to tackle you.
No, we didn't have that. But we did have I love dodgeball because, like, I was strategic about it. I was hiding the back. You know, like you wait, I'm short. I never get hit. And then you get to the end and I'm like good at, if you're good at, it's like a great sport for like catching.
Yeah.
Just throwing hard. You just got to catch it once. You knock that counter punch. It's a great sport. It's really.
Do you got butts up? Do you guys play that?
What does that mean?
That's like handball. It's a version of handball, except if you, instead of getting like, if you lose a point, instead of losing a point, you just go stand against the wall with like your butt in the air. And then everyone playing lines up
this
with a tennis ball. They line up with a tennis ball and throw it at you as fast as they possibly can.
What is going on in California? You're in California.
The mean streets of Northern California.
Smear the Queer and Butts Up.
Yeah, that's, those are the two major games. Dodgeball.
Those are the two major games. Like, in California.
Those are as big as tetherball and basketball.
Wow.
As big.
No wonder why you're
shout out to Lake Forest Elementary School.
Yeah,
in
what kind of school
California.
Is this? What about in Israel? Are they with the kids? Is it like the same way America is now? We're in Canada apparently, where everyone's getting soft and you can't. Everything's oppressive.
I would imagine
they didn't get all PC yet in Israel.
Yeah,
yeah. They're still they say what they think to a fault
because they have to join the military.
Yeah, some people in the military are combat soldiers. Some are making sandwiches.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you got to make it. You still got to be tough.
Yeah.
You got to be able to handle it.
Well, also, you know, just in general, people are they haven't gotten all squirrely about words yet in Israel. They say what they think. You know, which is sometimes too much.
Yeah.
They'll be like, no, listen, you are an asshole.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds good in that accent.
Am I allowed to say that on the podcast?
I just said Smear the Queer.
Yeah, they
you
said
can say whatever
they
you
said
want.
We're PG-13 in that Sea Alive promotion.
No, we're not.
That's what they said.
That's ridiculous. Next story of the week. Oh, again, this is for our Sea Alive listeners, viewers in Canada. Next story of the week comes to us from The Hill, Kaplan.
All right.
Is that a good one or a bad one?
It's good. It's a good political publication.
Justin Trudeau announces Canadian ban of single-use plastic straws as early as 2021. Single-use plastic straws.
That's an enemy of... we have our first prime minister. Is he a prime minister or president? What did you just say?
He's a prime minister. He's a prime minister.
Yeah, as you would say, he's a coach. This guy is a huge enemy of the pod.
Huge enemy of the pod.
How can you blame the whole country? I don't have a choice.
Wait, Justin Trudeau is an enemy of this show?
This show.
Well, he is now because he just banned plastic straws.
Well, that makes sense.
I'm very pro Bill de Blasio because he got the other ice cream trucks off the streets.
I'm very pro... wasting in my way. Everyone's got to have one way they kill the world. Yeah. I just like a nice plastic straw when I'm drinking my iced coffee.
The whole reason why they don't like plastic straws is because it goes up the nose of turtles, right? And then it kills turtles.
Is that the reason?
And, yeah, and Jimmy Schubert.
What does a turtle do for you?
Jimmy Schubert has the best joke of all time where he's like, what? I had a straw up my nose for a decade. I'm still alive.
Yeah, these turtles got to toughen up. They're like turtles, the dodgeball playing kids.
Yeah, these turtles got to toughen up. The other thing they're planning on banning out there, water bottles, plastic bags, and straws. So I don't understand why they started with straws. I get it, the turtle thing, but also
they're small. They're not that big. A bag's bigger.
A water bottle's much bigger.
Right, and also there's been a lot of research, like when you've banning plastic bags in areas, I don't have the stats obviously to back up anything, but I know it doesn't really do that much. Like there's paper, there's other things that are bad for the environment that people replace things with. Like, it doesn't usually make it makes people feel good about themselves.
Well,
they feel all smug when they go to the supermarket.
Our next
and they
story.
Bring their own bag. Like, I went
Oh, they love bringing their
so
own
I went,
bag.
So when I was coming, I was in New Jersey recently, and I went, have you ever seen the supermarket Aldi, I think it's called?
No.
Anyone? It's like a German supermarket, and it's super cheap. So it's awesome, and it's because it's like it's sort of like Trader Joe's in a way where they have different rules to make it cheaper.
Sure.
But one of the things they do is two things that are probably,
different rules.
To get a shopping cart, you have to put a quarter in. Because
this is in America?
It is in America because
they
don't hire a lot of employees, so they don't want to have to return them. So they think to get your quarter back, you're going to put the shopping cart back.
Okay.
And then two, there's no bags. So you have to bring a bag.
They don't even have bags.
There's no option, and you have to pack your own.
Wait, so what happens if you buy stuff and you forgot your bag?
You just have to carry it into the car and like slam it down in the trunk.
You better have really big hands.
I think there's like some sort of thing you can buy there. It's like not a plastic bag. I forget, but it was like, yeah, there's no, most people there are just taking everything and they're put in the car and then bring it to the car and just, yeah.
In America, are plastic bags still free at grocery stores?
Oh, yes, yeah. Try to charge, I think in California they might charge. They try to charge in New York and then people were like, but that'll hurt poor people obviously more. And
are you kidding?
Which it would. I mean,
I can never predict what the left in America is how they're going to spin. To me, like getting rid of plastic bags would be something that the left would support.
They do. They
but
do.
I don't
no,
think
it is
the
a left.
Extra level when then they say no, but that's defense, hurting poor people.
It doesn't have felt
like,
practical.
Oh, yeah, there's extra levels.
I mean, I reuse all of our plastic bags. Randy is listening to CY can confirm. I reuse them for pancakes poop. It makes me feel really smug.
For
I'm a
dog
great
poop.
My dog.
Oh, your dog. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I pick it up. I'm a great environmentalist. That
Cap,
way,
so. You were talking about the environment. Next story of the week comes to us from CNN. Burst strike. People are refusing to have kids because of climate change.
We're an environmental theme episode.
This is
China's the most environmentally friendly country in the old days.
Sure.
When they had the one child policy.
Well, now it's two.
Yeah.
By the way, did you know that this is off topic, but you know there's like Mormon people out there trying to convert Chinese people to become Mormons? It's like you realize your whole thing of being a Mormon is to have their whole philosophy is to have more kids.
Yeah.
And the more kids you have, the more people they have in the future so they can take over the world.
Yeah.
It's literally illegal for them to have more kids.
It's a big catch-22.
All right, let's get back to people refuse to have kids because of climate change. This is what I've been saying for years. I have no kids. Do you have kids?
I don't have
Dan
kids.
Okay. Not have kids.
I think I don't have kids. He's Dan doesn't have
but
kids.
But it's not because of climate change.
Producer Matt doesn't have kids. None of us should have to recycle. If you don't have kids, you shouldn't have to recycle. Wait, yeah, you have two kids.
I would not have had kids if I could have kept the plastic straw.
I think that should be the law.
I think you should make sure your kids know that you value them slightly less than a plastic
slightly
straw.
Slightly less,
that's
yes.
why this is a pot of the alt middle.
Yeah.
We're figuring it out.
I agree with you, because you're right. I'm bringing... But the thing is, you need to have kids if you want to have people who are going to invent things that are good for the environment. And, you know, change policies that are good for the environment.
Disagree.
Because if the only people having kids are people who don't give a shit... then they're all going to raise people who don't give a shit. So, like, I think it's a self-defeating
policy. No, I'm saying it
possibly.
Should be illegal. I think a one-child policy for the world.
One-child policy?
Yeah. Except certain countries, like, I would say zero.
Yeah, but then I just think people without siblings sometimes.
But, you know what? I think the thought isn't that your kids are going to cause climate change, but they think their kids will grow up in a world that will be a dystopia.
Oh.
Right.
But there is a thing that, you know, that humans are the biggest polluter. That's just like a fact.
Yeah.
And so I think what this is saying is these are just like extra, extra, extra woke people.
Well, they're also saying that like, oh, the world's going to end. It's selfish to even raise a child now, which is like crazy because like there have been so many worse times in the history of humanity. That you could have been like, well, I can't have kids.
I grew up when
yeah, like
when
the
we
Black
were...
Plague.
Looks like so.
Well, you remember when we were kids? They had like we were worried about nuclear war.
Yeah, there was that.
We had these drills where we'd hide under our desks and the duck and cover drills.
My grandparents dug a bomb shelter in their backyard rural New Mexico.
And like, people now are like, I try to explain to younger people now. We were worried that the world would literally end in like a minute.
Yeah. Well, even after 9/11, people were worried, like, oh my God, this is like the new future.
Yeah.
And no one stops to be like, oh, it's pretty amazing that, I don't know, the world's pretty great.
It's pretty good.
Problems, but.
Pretty good. Last story of the week comes to us from The Independent.
Mm.
New hands-free dining restaurant will feed you dinner directly into your mouth.
That is awesome.
Heroes of the week, folks.
Can I give you a $1 billion idea?
Yeah.
We got to take a step further. New restaurant where we wipe your ass for you.
Ooh.
Yeah. Everything. We don't want anyone to have to do anything for
themselves. But no, it's like a computer, like a robot does it. Because I wouldn't want someone wiping. I would feel bad about that.
Yeah. It's gotta be a robot.
Impersonal.
Or like, be a little creepy.
Or like confessional where I don't see the person.
It's
like, I don't want to. Because what do you tip on?
Like a glory hole.
Wait, what do you tip
on? A glory hole.
A glory hole for wiping.
You put your arm through a brick wall.
The glory hole experience. Because what would you tip on this wipe? Because get Weber on the.
I think it depends on how.
tipping on a wipe your butt restaurant.
Yeah. What is tipping on the feed you restaurant? Is it that's
it's got to be at least 20-22%.
Right, I hope they're not using plastic
22%
forks.
Of what?
It's every,
it's got one of those screens comes up where they're like, it's 30 20. Yeah. 25.
But has this been a problem before where people, you get to the restaurant, you're so like lazy, like I can't, I'm holding this fork.
This is like
cutting my food for me. Yeah. I can never do it properly, like a steak. I could use that.
We really are just getting like, Israel's putting making everyone join the military, and we're like, I can't open my mouth.
Yeah. It's like that movie Wall-E or something where you're just like an assembly line of slobs. So
Lord.
Yeah, it's a great future. I love it.
It's great. That's the podcast. Daniel, thanks for doing it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, this was fun. Yeah.
Producer Matt, I feel like, did we even get you on today?
Get back on here.
You did now.
All right. Thanks to producer Matt. Cap, what should we do?
Let's get lost.
Get lost.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.